Hello and welcome to the Middle East, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Turkmenistan, perhaps the authorities in Turkmenistan are in trouble. This bold statement is based on many recent signs which indicates that the trajectory of things are not going well. With economic indicators already troubling, recently the national currency is losing value in an unprecedented scale. Shortage of basic staples are in alarming level and unemployment is on the rise. The most concerning development is not only authorities can't come up with the solution, instead some of their steps appears to be extremely counterproductive. In today's Majlis, we are back in Turkmenistan to discuss realities on the ground, the way in which people are coping with this situation, and where things are likely headed going forward. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Max Lambertson, Eastern Europe a political economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit. Dr. Luka Ancici is with us, who's the Central Asia lecturer at the University of Glasgow. And Dr. Luka is also an author of a book on Turkmenistan's politics of neutrality. Farouk Yusupi is joining us, who's the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen service. And also Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hello.
Very nice to have you. So, Farouk, let's start with you. Given your team is reporting, the economic situation of Turkmenistan is pretty bad. Just how bad is this? Describe us the situation the way you see it.
It's not only bad. Bad would be the wrong word here. The economy has collapsed, I think. It's not functioning at all. The government is not doing what it's supposed to do. People cannot get their money on time. People cannot afford to buy food. There is food shortage. Nothing's working. To put it shortly, it has collapsed, I think, by this time.
Mm-hmm. Max, one of the reasons why we are talking about this topic today is your recent article on Turkmenistan. So tell us, please, what are the indicators you see about the Turkmen economy and what do they tell you?
Sure. Well, the hard data on Turkmenistan is very hard to come by, and there's only a few indicators that we can really be certain of. And those two would be the revenue from exports that Turkmenistan generates, because that's also reported by its partner trading countries, notably China, and then also reports of money owed to Turkmenistan held abroad. So on the first account, it's very clear that export revenue for Turkmenistan has fallen dramatically over the last few years, owing to both the fall in global energy prices in 2014, 2016, and then also the ending of exports to Russia and to Iran. But also looking at data from the Bank for International Settlements, which is basically kind of like a central bank for the world, which updates quarterly its data and shows all banks reporting to it, say, what their positions are relative to other countries. And we can see that there's about just under $23 billion in German banks owed to counterparties in Turkmenistan, and that this fell a little bit from a peak of about $26 billion before that. So there's a lot of money held in Germany. We don't know who the account holder is, but research done in the past by Global Witness, who's looked into money that Turkmenistan has held offshore, thinks that this is either the Turkmen's sort of reserve fund or the president's funds. We don't have any hard proof about exactly who the identity of the owner is, but the fluctuations in the value of the account seem to match the fortunes of Turkmenistan's gas revenue flows. So it seems quite strange for the country to be going through such a dramatic economic crisis, even though it has funds that it could draw on to try to compensate from that.
That's interesting. We will get to this topic, Bruce. I wanted to take your thought on something else. Just before the discussion, we were talking about some of these issues, and you mentioned something very interesting, you saying that probably it's not only wrong politics or maybe wrong governance. This year, it seems even the nature isn't so friendly with Turkmenistan. Elaborate on that, please.
You're going to make me use my big material up front, are you? Okay. No, I was just suggesting that of course the government's policy has contributed greatly to the deterioration of everything practically inside Turkmenistan, living standards and everything. But you know, this year, on top of it, you know, we had the dramatic floods in mid-May, and they were followed by the strange salt storm from salt that was picked up by high winds, you know, on the Aral Sea and blown all over Turkmenistan. And as a Christian, of course, I remember stories from the Old Testament. And this is very familiar of the days of Moses and the Pharaoh all of a sudden with the plagues coming. And, you know, I had to obviously global warming, bad luck, something like that. But considering how many things are going bad in Turkmenistan, for nature to start attacking the country too, you'd have to think that things are not looking good.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Luca, let's break down some of these hard data that Max mentioned. One of them is, I think, Turkmenistan's currency politics seems to be really on the shaky ground, or perhaps on unsustainable ground. So huge difference between the official and the market rate of Turkmen currency against dollar. What is this doing to the economy?
Well, I want to make a general point here. Yeah. And the general point is that we have been talking about this crisis for, 4 years now? Mm. 3-4 years? And it seems to me that the government has not changed any significant portion of its economic policy. Mm. So everything is happening as if business is usual. Mm. But business is not going on as usual, and which creates this big gap between the issue and the solution. So we can analyze the particular policy areas, finances, the monetary segment, the money offshore. But for me, it's all part of the same problem. And the same problem is that they are not reacting. They're not reacting in the way that they should. They're just becoming more authoritarian. They're restricting withdrawal money. They're restricting capitals going outside of the country. They are restricting the movement of people around the country. So there is not a proportional response to what we're seeing. And in the short term, this can only mean one thing, that things are going to get even worse. So you are right, Mohammed. There is this kind of, you know, big gap between the black market exchange and the nominal exchange of the manat. But it seems, I haven't really heard any kind of official response. And by the way, I read the Turkmen papers virtually every week, so I'm following. They don't see any kind of response to this. There is this idea that the crisis is not happening in the economic foreign policy, economic also policy of Turkmenistan, that is really worrying. There is a general idea of denial in this elite about what's going on really in the country. And the monetary is just part of that.
Mm. Sticking to the currency thing, Farooq, as Dr. Luca said, there is not much information about this coming out from the official channels. Have you come across with anything, how they are explaining this situation?
Of course, they are not explaining anything. I mean, I would add to Dr. Luca's opinion that probably everyone is aware, especially ordinary people are aware that things are very wrong today. Probably some of the officials are also aware that things are not going in the right direction. They cannot voice their concerns, but because it seems that only one person is trying to deny that there is crisis, that country has to be saved. That's President Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov, who is singing and pretending that he's inventing new cars and etc. etc. People probably are afraid to tell him, but from ordinary people, we are hearing more and more criticism of the government, which was not seen in the past, and people are getting very, very upset, if not angry. But officials, of course, never accept that they are in trouble, because they don't want to be in contrary with the one person, president of the Turkmenistan.
Mm-hmm. Max, I'm kind of obsessed with this currency situation, devaluation of manat against the dollar. So who might be benefiting from this situation?
Well, I think it's essentially the government is benefiting from the situation, because they're basically putting a claim on the country's foreign currency to use them dedicated to their large infrastructure or white elephant projects. So if they were to allow everyone to access foreign currency, then there was just not enough to go around to both fund the construction and also so that people working in the country, companies in Turkmenistan, would be able to import the goods that they need to function normally. Hmm. And by keeping the official rate pegged at 3.5 to the dollar, they are making it, you know, much cheaper for themselves, for the government to do business, whereas everyone else who can't have access to foreign currency has to pay, you know, almost, you know, up to 30 manas to the dollar to get their hands on it. And so they also don't seem to be wanting to go into any of the reserves to defend the currency so that there could be more access to it for most people. So that's what it seems like to me, because there seems to be enough money, for example, to pay for the Tapi pipeline, but the government is still going around asking for investors to pay for it. And so it seems very much to be a matter of the government not wanting to touch its own resources and just instantly just kind of taking it from the people.
That's very interesting. Bruce, feel free to add your thoughts on what we've been talking about. And I also wondered your thoughts on the other thing, the logic behind the recent travel restriction involving young people inside and also abroad. So what do you see the logic behind that might be?
The travel restriction. Well, you know, I've been trying to figure out exactly what. There's several reasons that come to mind. I mean, we know they've been questioning people that come back into the country, and now they put the ban on first on men under 30, then they raise that to under 40. They might be trying to confront multiple problems here. It's entirely possible a position that's forming outside of Turkmenistan among migrant workers or people who have somehow or another settled in these other countries, and the Turkmen security got wind of it and is worried about that possibly happening. There's also this kind of embarrassment that goes with the shuttle trading business. Farouk's service was reporting more and more about Turkmen that were abroad that are getting into trouble. You know, they take a flight to usually Turkey or somewhere like that. They're doing some kind of minor business, possibly not entirely legal, but, you know, a little shady stuff. And they get caught, you know, and then, of course, their explanation is that they can't make any money back home because there's no employment. It could be, I wouldn't put it past Berdi Mukhammedov anyway to, like, think this is embarrassing me. And I'd rather they sat here and starved in their own country than embarrass my government by getting caught doing something illegal abroad. You know, that's otherwise I can't tell you, because it makes no sense. We know unemployment is minimum 60% and probably 70% and only going up. Why would you want to keep a bunch of 20 and 30 year old young men in your country with no hope of work and not much food? Why not just keep dumping gunpowder into the keg and getting ready to blow it up or something? It doesn't make any sense.
Apart from the international travel restrictions, I believe one of the reports I read, I believe from Farouk, your team, is that there were some sort of restrictions even within the country to people, especially from Dashoghuz province. What was that about?
It was about the people from provinces traveling to Ashgabat. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are restrictions for internal travels too, because, you know, the Ashgabat is this shining marble city, and authorities have tried to keep what they describe like shabby-looking people. You know, they are embarrassed of their own people. They are embarrassed to show how people look to probably visiting people, also probably to keep them away from the site of this political elite that is concentrated in the capital of Turkmenistan. And also people from provinces come to Ashgabat in search of some sort of job. Mm-hmm. But there are no jobs since the end of the constructions for the, I would call them, infamous 2017 Asian Indoor Games. Yeah. There is nothing to offer. Ashgabat cannot offer any jobs to people that come from provinces. So
the country is, you said, Farouk, is in crisis, and then authorities are concerned about the image. Dr. Luka, how do you see this, the travel restrictions within and abroad involving young people? Is it somehow related to the type of crisis that we are talking about?
Absolutely. And I do have to agree with Bruce. This is a poor decision, because we've seen these in authoritarian regimes across Asia, all of those that have economic problems. What they tend to do, they tend to have programs of student exchange, working relaxation, that allow people to go and travel overseas. I mean, Iran is one of them, for instance. So This is why it's completely counterintuitive. It's extremely bad, also because it's a further violation of the rights of the population, if you want to talk in that sense. But also, to me, it creates a big problem because it is a response that fails to address the issue. Because this is a country where Bruce said 70% of unemployment rate. What are the people going to do? Are they going to be just quiet in the streets? How long can this be? So it's part of this even further hardening of domestic politics, which has been, you know, if possible, made even worse by the economic crisis. So it seems to me that it is part of the same scenario. The scenario is that what they decide to do, they are not going to change what the economic policy is, but they're just going to make their politics more and more restrictive. It's a question of denial. Someone before mentioned image making. It could be some, if you want, warped understanding of self-preservation. But to me, it's all about short-term. This cannot go on for long. Mm. It cannot go on forever. I mean, Bruce and I wrote a couple of pieces in which we were saying, well, he's going. I mean, eventually the president will be removed if things don't change. And it seems to me that that's the only solution. If you don't want to change the old economy, if you don't want to change your politics, it's easier to change a figurehead rather than keep pushing the population out of the brink. Mm.
Thank you, Dr. Luca. The question is also, who is driving these unrealistic and catastrophic economic policies, and where is this leading the country? Also, what can be done about it, and what can the authorities or regional actors do about it? We will continue the Majlis podcast discussing these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are discussing Turkmenistan's dire economic situation and its implications within and beyond the country. Joining me in the discussion are Max Lemerson, Eastern Europe political economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit, Dr. Lukan Chesci, Central Asia lecturer at the University of Glasgow, Farah Yusupi, the director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen service, and Bruce Spanier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Awazi. Welcome back, gentlemen. So what is causing all this negative trend? Kick off the discussion for us, Max, if you can.
Sure. Well, I would just like to echo what everyone else has said before this, that this really is a product almost entirely of maladministration on the part of the authorities. Hmm. There really is no good reason why Turkmenistan shouldn't be on the path to becoming Qatar, given that it has almost exactly the same endowment in terms of population and mineral resources. And it really could be in not just, you know, a normal functioning country. It could even be quite prosperous if it were administered correctly. And so I just think that the only solution right now, and this is what the IMF has basically told the country in as circumspect a manner as possible, is to devaluate the currency to match the black market rate. That's what Uzbekistan did last year. And that has been part of Uzbekistan sort of opening up its economy and liberalizing, you know, quote unquote, a little bit more on the economic side of things. And without doing that, the only way that the authorities can keep the current system in place is by becoming more authoritarian, as Luca mentioned, and putting in place even more draconian policies. And it's exactly what's been happening for the last 2 years. But it also seems that it's unclear how long this could carry on for. I mean, I used to think that this couldn't carry on for very much longer at all. But now it seems unclear to me, because given how spread out the population is between different population centers and the security services, it seems like they could carry on like this for maybe, you know, another year or two. I'd be very interested in hearing the thoughts of others about this. But it seems, you know, things are getting much worse all the time. But it doesn't also seem that the breaking point is very clear on the horizon.
Breaking point is very clear on the horizon.
It's not very clear, I would say, where that is.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit later. Before that, Dr. Luca, referring to some of the Max's points, he said that Turkmenistan easily could be Qatar, but it's not turning to Qatar, and it's not also becoming Kuwait in the idea that Niyazov was flaunting in his early days of presidency. So what's the mindset behind the policies which is driving Turkmenistan away from being Qatar or Kuwait?
Well, it is an extremely authoritarian management of energy resources. I mean, the parallel with Qatar works. Geography is not obviously on Turkmenistan side, but we could argue that, you know, there is a potential there. But it seems to me that this systematic closure of the domestic gas, you know, the onshore fields to foreign investors actually has been detrimental to a very, very, very significant extent. So what I'm saying is that it's the mindset of the elite, which we've seen pretty much unchanged in the Azov's era. And it is extremely close, very much inward-looking, not interested in globalization, and not interested in international cooperation group of people. And this can actually work in a small country with, as Max observed, very dispersed population. It can work when either the oil prices are very high or the revenues are flowing thick and fast. Well, at the moment, you know, even though prices are rising, the money is not coming in. The revenues, it's very little, as we all know. So this is the kind of change of scenery that reveals even further all of these inconsistencies, idiosyncrasies of the economic policy. There is a one only specific context in which I couldn't work, which was probably in the early Niazov, no, it's on the late Niazov era, but now it's not the best context at all to have this kind of, you know, very autarkic economic foreign policy. But beyond that, what I am really sort of surprised, if you want, is the apparent, absolute lack of reaction. They haven't adjusted. They haven't announced any kind of, of measure. I mean, I understand that if you think you are in the golden age, things cannot get better, don't have to be changed. But the reality is, and if the colleagues from the Turkmen Service say to us that the population is getting angry, that there is a crisis, and I haven't seen any kind of reaction to that.
Farouk, why isn't there any reaction if they are angry?
Oh, the people are afraid and people are in fear because, I mean, imagine a country when people get 20 years of jail for just giving an interview to Radio Free Europe or any other independent media. I'm talking about...
I actually meant the government reaction, the government to the crisis. Yes, that's what I meant.
Oh, yeah. The government reaction, we were talking about this is misgovernance on the parts of the government. And probably it's not only their wish not to change. It's probably their lack of experience and lack of knowledge how to do things. And we were talking about Turkmenistan easily could become Qatar. But to become like Qatar, you have to be like Qatar. You have to act like Qatar. And as Dr. Lucas said, Qatar invited lots of foreign investors, which is not the case in Turkmenistan. They are squeezing out even small investors, like they kicked out such companies as Polymax and other Turkish construction companies, denying them payment of the debts on the part of the government. And of course, I think there were all the potential for this country to become prosperous, but for some weird reason, which cannot be explained, which I cannot explain, they are not doing it. And
you know,
that's probably lack of experience, lack of knowledge how to do it. I don't know.
Could also be some other things. Let me bring Bruce you in this. In Turkmenistan, we know how policies are adopted. Things change only when the person, the man in the top, decides to change. So, do you think he is aware of this trouble? Obviously, you know, like anyone, President Berdimuhamedov also has the right to take off time and do what he wants to do in his private time. I guess you already know where I'm taking you. So the video that I have seen was really troubling, in which the President Berdimuhamedov was shown in Avaza just a couple of days ago, jogging in an empty road, an empty gym, writing poems, listening to its translation by his grandson. And the way all that is streamed on the public media, the image you get from him is not of someone who's faced with any challenge. So is he aware of the country's dire economic situation?
He has to be aware to some extent. You know, and I have no problem with him fooling around on vacation. The problem is that videos like this happen all the time, even when he's supposed to be working. I can't think of any leader in the world that does this. All right, let's start with that first. Putin will do the horse, you know, the shirtless horse thing and stuff like that, but he's not going to pretend he's a DJ or, you know, something like that. You know, I've, wondered who Berdim Muhammadov's image maker is and where they, what their experience is, because this just doesn't, for me, this doesn't work at all. It's more like laughing in the people's face. Look at how good my life is while yours is getting worse. Now, what does he know that there's a problem? If you look, I think there's a real significance to the fact that he doesn't travel very much, and that's not a big thing for Turkmen leaders. They didn't socialize a lot. He did right after he got in office, but that was 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. So, but lately, this year he's only gone on four trips, right? And the first one was to Herat when they launched TAPI, and he was there for about 3 hours. And of course, it's right by the Turkmen border. Now, the second one was the big trip. That was when he went to Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates. And of course, he was panhandling essentially while he was down there. And it was important enough for him to miss the Central Asian Summit, I might add. And then he went to Uzbekistan for less than 48 hours. But part of that was spent right next to the Turkmen border, too. And he made a 1-day trip to Tajikistan for the water forum, where his big idea was, let's turn the whole thing over to a UN commission. But he does. So you see, he doesn't go very far from home. Even last year, he went to Sochi, but from Ashgabat, that's not very far away. I mean, he stays real close. If something happened, he could be home really in a matter of a few hours. He didn't go to Astana for the summit. He could have probably gone to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit in June, but he didn't. He didn't go to the launch of the Trans-Anatolian natural gas pipeline in June, even though the Turkish president invited him. And that's a project that Turkmenistan benefits from directly if everything works out right with the Trans-Caspian or something. Even he seems to feel like he can't go. He doesn't leave home very much. And when he does, he doesn't go very far away, except for the Kuwait UAE trip, which obviously was very significant and important for him.
Now, Farouk, you wanted to say something.
I wanted to add to this thing about him singing with his grandson and writing the poem, saying that Turkmenistan, it's the country of happiness. We live in era of happiness. But probably he wants to remind Turkmen people that everything is good, that Turkmenistan is the most developed and the richest country in the world. But Turkmen people know that no matter how many times you say halwa, it doesn't sweeten your mouth. As Bruce said, this is funny, and this is probably very much frustrating to people who cannot afford buying a piece of bread. And he is bragging around with his son, his luxury palace, singing and riding a bicycle and having really, really good time when people are suffering. People are really suffering.
Okay, Max, now you've heard Bruce and Farouk both saying, especially the commentary about the video that President Berdimuhamedov just posted a couple of days ago, in which he seems to be really happy and enjoying the life and the country is in crisis. So what is the biggest challenge here? Is this a wrong politics, wrong governance, wrong leader? What is this?
I think it's all three of those. And I think that perhaps it's also not just disconnect between the leader and the population, but maybe he thinks he can also persuade people that actually Turkmenistan is in a golden age by putting out these videos showing how great things are. I mean, given how counterproductive a lot of their strategies are, like the ban on people leaving the country, there's not a lot of rhyme to reason to a lot of these policies. And given that he spends so little time outside the country, probably has very little interaction with foreigners. And so there's just a kind of a dearth of expertise in the country. And if the education system being kind of stripped for parts and people being fired and constantly turned over in government ministries, even in the oil and gas sector, there's just a complete lack of understanding of how to govern a country. And so I think that it's all three of those factors. I don't think you can really turn this country around with this president or with this governance system or with the political system the way it's currently designed in such an authoritarian manner.
Lately, he has been taking some steps, his son's political career is on the rise after the meeting with Nazarbayev earlier this year. Recently, I think he went to Europe, meeting top official from OSCE, EU, Atomic Energy Agency, etc. So, Dr. Luka, what President Berdimuhamedov is trying to achieve in this direction?
Oh, I got no idea. It is... I am completely, completely baffled by whatever is happening there. If you look comparatively at the two different regimes, you know, Niyazov and Berdimuhamedov, and I always thought that, you know, that they're part of the same cycle. You know, things get better, they get worse, and then the president goes. But so we never seen this kind of totally idiosyncratic governance for Niyazov. I mean, we did see, you know, the cult of personality, Stalinist kind of context, but the bizarre world which this president seemed to be inhabiting is totally baffling to me. And the reforms are always late, or they never happen, or they never in the right direction. I mean, Bruce before mentioned the trips he took to the Gulf. Well, the trip to took for the Gulf were apparently to ask for money for a pipeline that will never be built. So here we have a reality, which is a failure of energy policy, and the fiction, which is supporting this policy, which has failed anyway. So it is an extremely interesting kind of scenario if you do have an interest in comparative authoritarianism, as I do professionally. But if you have to live in that country, or you had to work with them, well, it seems to me that it's a very intractable sort of government to have. And this, to me, is the main issue, is that you will never have a kind of foreign partners that take them seriously now, because they know that they are in a very, very tight corner. They know that they are in a situation of virtually dependency, 100% dependency on China. So who's going to help them? And this, and someone mentioned, how can we sort of envisage foreign influences working to Turkmenistan. I don't think they can, because on the one hand, we have a very sort of closed up regime, isolation, insulation, is what neutrality is for them. But on the other, you also have an international community that looks at Turkmenistan now with even more skepticism than they did when Niyazov was at the highest of Niyazov Shina, if you want. So it's not a present scenario. It's not conducive to positive development. And again, the only thing which I can think is shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I have two.
Can I jump in for 1 second?
Sure.
To point out, you know, what Luca was just saying about, the way the government's image has plummeted, it's worth remembering Max's recent article again, too, that imagine this, that here's a government that's going around and sending representatives around looking for investment from all these different governments in these projects they want to do. And now you find out that they got $23 billion in the bank that they're not willing to touch to even support these great projects that they're trying to sell. You know, I mean, it makes it absurd. I can't imagine anyone in the world would invest in Turkmenistan these days.
No, absolutely. And this is the main problem. The main problem is that the solution must come from within. And the current elite has proved itself totally incapable to think of a great solution for the problems. So, again, it's depressing if you think about it.
Talking of investment, recently I think I heard President Berdimuhamedov talking about the privatization of Obuasi. How is this front going, Farouk? Have you heard anything coming out of that?
As far as I know, no foreign investor was interested in that offer. And we don't have, of course, official confirmation, but those property, the hotels and other infrastructure, is being forced to be bought by local business people. But there are no many local business people who can afford this kind of property. And that's why recently they gave away, I mean, they transferred some of the property to this union of entrepreneurs and producers. Now, this is a very influential organization that every entrepreneur in Turkmenistan has to be a member of. And recently, much of Avaza was transferred to this organization so that they can manage it and maintain it, because no one is coming to those hotels and to those resorts, and there is no money to maintain it. So what now will happen, I guess, is that this organization will introduce some sort of an additional fee to be paid by local businesses so that they can invest and keep those unused and unnecessary hotels and infrastructure running. But why would they keep it running if no one is coming and staying there?
We're running out of time, but just a couple of the final points, Max. So things are bad, and it's just really, really getting worse. So is there anything that Berdimuhamedov, President Berdimuhamedov, can do to change this negative trend?
The clearest option is to devalue the official rate to the black market rate and to reestablish, you know, to remove the controls on foreign currency flows and, you know, get the economy functioning a little better. Mm-hmm. He could also, you know, maybe use some of the government's reserves to fund infrastructure building so that it doesn't have to lean on the population and garnish their wages or lay people off to do that. They can also improve relations with Iran and with Russia to try to get those gas flows going again. I mean, there's a lot of things I can think of that he could do, but the fact that they haven't even seemed to be considering them for several years now, it makes me very skeptical that they would actually take any of these measures anytime soon.
You know, Dr. Luka, we do this kind of predictions at the end of every discussion that we have had on Turkmenistan. So what's your thought on what can he do to change this negative trajectory?
Well, I know what he should do, and but he will not do it. Mm. And the thing is that he should really open the onshore market to upstream stakes for foreign companies. That's all you could do. It should open up the energy industry, which is the main employer, is the main GDP contributor, and the budget contributor, to people who got the money. So, you know, foreign companies, even if they are Westerners, that would be an important development. Mind you, it would still be a medium-term development. The long-term solution to all of this is diversification, but I'm not going to go into it because it would be really talking about sort of, you know, science fiction. But it seems to me that if there is this kind of significant change in the management of the resources, situation can be turned over quite sort of quickly, even because foreign companies means more jobs, people get employed, and there is more training, of course. So looking at the playbook of Nazarbayev in the sort of mid to late 90s, that's something which I would do if I were him. I am not sure how this is going to pan out. I mean, someone in Ashgabat must have realized that no change is no longer an option. There has to be some change coming, and we will see. I mean, the willingness, the openness to this kind of change is actually the determinant to the length of this regime. I think we got to the point at which, you know, as Max was saying before, we don't know what is happening, but we know that if there is business as usual, even with heightened sort of repression and brutal repression, is no longer an option. There will have to be a time at which change is introduced. And we will see. I mean, it's not going to be a pleasant wait, I'm afraid. But this is what I was seeing this thing going.
Okay, just a couple of final things. So, Bruce and Farouk, feel free to jump in. So, given the circumstances, the challenges that we have been talking about today, so when you think of Turkmenistan, what will you be looking at going forward?
I could add to the answers to the previous question, that what can be done, what he can do. I mean, he can probably bring back some of the professionals that he fired in the beginning of his career as the president, and let them try to correct the situation and bring in, as Dr. Anceski said, bring in foreign investors, which will create more jobs. And he should really take up the career of a writer or a musician or whatever he is good at, and let other people do their jobs and just sing songs and write poems and ride bicycles. I think that would be the best scenario for Turkmenistan. But as Dr. Ceske said, I mean, it's science fiction and probably will not happen. And he will continue meddling into the business and continue worsening the situation rather than improving it.
So, Bruce, so yes, things are bad and getting worse, and there is not much of appetite for change. So what you would be looking at going forward in Turkmenistan?
Well, I mean, that kind of sums it up. I don't expect there'll be any change. You know, what I would mention here is that the system the government has set up for years has been based on this idea that it's the golden age or the age of happiness or something. The government, to the best of my knowledge, has never admitted once during independence that they've made any mistake at all. Mm. They're a prisoner of their own image at the moment. The kind of changes that they need to make are drastic changes. They'll be obvious to everybody when they happen. Now, if you're living in a perfect world and all of a sudden you hear that you're going to have to do something because there's one part that's not perfect, even though you've been told this for years and years. How do you introduce that to the public without undermining your confidence, which really is probably fairly undermined anyway? But at least the Turkmen government has never admitted to a mistake. So once me and Luca have talked about this a lot, how do you introduce a radical change when you've been telling everybody that everything is great the way it is? You know, it's a problem that they created themselves.
Okay, let's see what they do about this. And thank you very much, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Uwazi. And also big thanks goes to Faruk Yusufi, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen service, Max Lumbertson, Eastern Europe political economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit, and Dr. Lokan Cesci, Central Asia lecturer at the University of Glasgow. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.